I think the process becomes of something of consistency to build up, right? So even getting back to that 100-mile race, like I had done a bunch of marathons and like there was like a training program, like go and run like for the next 4 weeks, you're going to run this set miles each day, you know, yada, 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 right? So, but you get to a certain point for 100, it's like, it's not like prior 2 weeks out from the race, you're going to do like an 80-mile like pre-race run, right? You're just like, okay, so I'm like, what am I going to get exposed to here? So my point was like, I'm just going to run 6 miles every day, no matter what. Just get up every day. So raining, snowing, hurricane, hot, cold, wet, just run. Just get in that consistent mode because this is what you set out to do. So this is what you're going to do.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Jason Yerusi is the founder of Yerusi Holdings and his wife, Peely. They have acquired over 1,110 multifamily units since 2017. He's an avid ultramarathoner, a workout enthusiast, and he hosts the Multifamily Live podcast. He wakes up every day at 4:32 a.m. And what did I hear, Jason? You're an aspiring ukulele player?
Growing into it right here, except my hands are telling me different.
I love it. You know, always be aspiring. Jason, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for that. And yes, the delicate instrument like ukulele, where I just have hands that are like rocks that anything I touch, it's like trying not to break something. It's been interesting. But yeah, I'm psyched to be here.
Hey, man, practice. I don't know. Even if it doesn't make you perfect, it's still a good thing to get in the reps. I love it. Jason, I'm looking forward to jumping in today. There's three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show. Can you, in 90 seconds or less, tell us where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah, sure. Met my wife, Peely, back in 2003. It took her 13 years to finally look at me for us to get together, right? So after a lot of hard here, we were living in New York City, running bars, opening breweries, restaurants. Hurricane Sandy happened. My dad had this crazy business, still does, where he lives and moves buildings. Went out there, started doing that. Loved helping dad and really scale his business and help a lot of homeowners, you know, raise their homes, not flood again. Realized very quickly that we did not want to be working and the narrative of working for dollars. And when we stopped, nothing came back. We're having our first baby. You know, Peely was pregnant, found real estate, got real active in real estate. We found now we're helping dad with active construction. Then we're doing active real estate at the same time. So we're just making active on top of active, doing flips, wholesales, everything else that comes with that. Knew that it was potentially the answer, but didn't know where that answer fell. Found buying rentals out of state, realized we could use our management experience to help empower people to really make these properties better together. And just saw that wasn't going to be scalable with the small multifamilies. Found large multifamily. And that was the aha moment where you go out there, buy these buildings using syndication, make them better businesses, make them better places to live, use economies of scale. And from that, use our background and really just management of other philosophies and carry that forward. So that's a quick 96. I might've been on 96, but I lost count.
96. No, you're close enough, man. That's great. I love it. That's a lot of moving pieces and a lot of transition. How did you navigate all of that transition? And what was the prize your eye was on when you guys were going through all those transitions?
You know, sometimes you think the prize is there in front of you and you think you're set out on a mark. However, it changes based on the parameters that come up, right? So when you're looking at the narrative of going out to help my dad, right? If that didn't happen, right? Hurricane Sandy, if that didn't happen, I probably would have never taken that step, right? Because I was not, my dad's had this business. It wasn't our path to go into it. And my brother's in the same time, right? And he was working for me and we were opening up restaurants. I opened and sold a brewery. I was doing a lot in that capacity, right? And that would have carried forward to a sense. And if you think about how that would have carried forward even to New York City today with so many things closing and so many things that had changed up, it would have been a whole different transition, right? So sometimes you get your eye on the prize where you think you're opening businesses and open your future. And the narrative changes because dad needed help. So we left what we were doing, went to help dad, right? And from there, it's usually the discovery comes in the action, right? And with the action there with the construction was that we could have worked, you know, my dad was doing 12 to 15 projects a year. Now over the course of 1 year, we did 300, right? And so if you look at that, massive growth. So if there was 25 hours in a day, we could have used them, right? But here we are, Peely and I, we're together. We're now, she's pregnant. And I'm like, well, I'm gone all day. I'm running at night, you know, I'm running on fumes. I'm never going to see the baby, right? So something has to change in this narrative here, or we're just going to be in a path that's driven by something else, right? So the goal becomes, okay, I have to get to time where the time can be driven on what I want the time. Like if I want to be sitting here on a podcast with you, or I want to be, you know, hanging out with my kids on a Tuesday, I can set the schedule, right? And we looked at real estate as that driver, and now is that piece. And it was that discovery that, okay, this is a potential piece for us to look at, but you don't know where you don't know, right? Because I didn't just jump into multifamily where that was that driver that would give us that advantage. We did what we thought was logical. Peewee got a real estate license. We thought that was okay, that maybe that's it, but here you are now, you know, agents, you know, you're on hours that fit everybody else's schedule, right? And so that was that point where it's a goal that gets in front of us until a new question comes up that gives us a better answer. And that's been so much of like how we've treated life is that, you know, if I were to say back, you know, when I first moved to New York City that, oh yeah, you know, today I would fast forward to today, I'll be living in Tennessee, you know, buying apartment buildings. And I was like, what? You know, like, okay, probably not. You know, that would have been the narrative of that moment.
Right. I think we take anything away from today's podcast. It came in the five words where you said that discovery comes in the action. Can you elaborate more on that and how, you know, mindset wise, how did you just keep moving forward? Because it sounds, I mean, to get hit by a hurricane, opening breweries, open restaurants and bars, doing that stuff and be like, oh, crap, we just got hammered. And then, hey, now we're going to travel across the country, you know, doing 300 homes. What were you doing with your dad's home business? Raising homes? What was that?
Yeah, it was actually, so during the course of it, we did about 2,000 of them is that we take houses that were on the ground that had gotten flooded or and during the storm, and they would lift them and lift them up maybe 4, 8, 10 feet up in the air, put a new foundation in so they would meet the new FEMA guidelines. And so their flood insurance would now come down to a minimal risk right here. And hopefully these houses won't flood when the next Hurricane Sandy comes in, right? And so this is still happening today, happens all over, you know, the East Coast, happens in Florida, happens in a lot of these seaborne markets here. And just because you're seeing flood insurance, you know, skyrocket because the NFIP at the time, you know, the National Flood Insurance Program, they basically were discounting to get people to get insurance, but they discounted to such capacity here where they had to pay out all these claims and they almost put themselves out of, you know, bankrupt themselves twice. Right. So now they're jacking up everybody's premium to try and bring them to a reasonable rate. But if you're going, you're a homeowner working, you know, paycheck to paycheck, paying flood insurance, and it used to be, you know, $3,000 a year and now it's $17,000 a year, what can you do? Right. You're at risk where you just can't go home. So the point about action that comes down for us is that, you know, I think back to like the what if scenario, right? And those two words drive a lot, right? And the what if can be, what if I had just tried that, right? What if I had just gone out there to do something, right? What if I had just, you know, said yes instead of saying no, or tried that profession that I just was scared to do because I was thought I had a secure job, you know, working at the factory. Well, that's the what if one side of it. But the other what if side of it is like, what if I could have something great happen by trying something, right? There's usually the opportunity of what if I can do something compared to what if this happens, right? And I found that we're a good combo, POA and I, where I'm always like, yeah, let's go, let's go. And she gives me that moment of clarity that we'll make a good decision, but she's open to the risk element that to expose, I would say expose is a weird word, but open us to opportunities that could potentially give us new questions, right? And even with apartment buildings is that as we've grown into this, we've surrounded ourselves with good people. And that's been our advantage to get out of the gate. But it's also given us the ability to learn new questions, right? Because I can only be good in my philosophy based on just knowing that I need to ask that question, right? I don't need to sometimes know the answer until I need the question answered, right? But you get stopped in your process many times because you want to know everything to get out of the gate. So I won't start, you know, I like ultra running. If I was to say, oh, I need to know how it feels to run a 100-mile race before I run a 100-mile race. It would be like, well, I'm never going to do it because how would I know that?
Right.
I don't know how to experience it without the action of trying, nor do I know how I'm going to react until I do something, right? And that's most of life is that we stop and don't start at all because we want to know all these answers. And the second that, you know, you get out of the gate and it's not perfect, you say, ah, it just wasn't for me.
Let's talk about running here for a minute. I'm not a runner. I don't claim to be. Yeah, it's just not in the cards for me. But talk to us about your progression of running, especially getting into ultras. I mean, that's kind of a new wave of the running world. And it's kind of, I mean, this takes a lot of grit and discipline. You know, if you're going to go out and run a 100-mile race, that's unfathomable to me. Talk to me about just that progression and kind of some of the things that you've used as tools to help you succeed in that.
You know, I find some people love to run, some people run. And I just run, right? And it's part of what I do. So to say that I'm like avid, like I'm going to go out there, I think the process becomes of something of consistency to build up, right? So even getting back to the 100-mile race, like I had done a bunch of marathons and like there was like a training program, like go and run like for the next 4 weeks, you're going to run this set miles each day, you know, yada, 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 right? So, but you get to a certain point for 100, it's like, it's not like prior 2 weeks out from the race, you're going to do like an 80-mile like pre-race run, right? You're just like, okay, so I'm like, what am I going to get exposed to here? So my point was like, I'm just going to run 6 miles every day, no matter what. Just get up every day. So raining, snowing, hurricane, hot, cold, wet, just run. Just get in that consistent mode because you just, this is what you set out to do. So this is what you're going to do. And that's usually the part, you know, we're hard critics of everybody else, but we're usually easy critics of ourselves, right? And where instead of saying, hey, you should have just gotten up when your alarm went off, right? You'll hit that alarm 57 times and not get up and then be late for the entire day and everything will be stressful and you'll be in traffic and it would just be one of those modes because, but you won't feel any better for hitting the alarm 50 times because it was annoying, right? But you've gotten now to that part where you've just let yourself off the hook so many times. So I've been pushing to not let myself off the hook because what's the advantage there? I'm not gaining anything in myself and my life, right? And if I want to get back, if we get back to that element, I want to spend time with my kids. Well, now I got three little ones. I got 7, 5, and 3, right? They're up. It's like romper. You don't know. So sometimes they're up, sometimes they're down. You don't know when they're going, you know? So I get up at 4:32, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. So I can have a moment to do my thing, collect myself, be ready for the day, and put myself in a position where I can take on what's coming in front of us. And then when they wake up, not feel rushed, not feel strained, not feel pass that on to them. And part of my process is I get up and I run and I do that, just run out, run back and just done, right? And do I want to do it every day? Absolutely not. I just do. This is what I do.
There's so much fruit that comes from one, getting something accomplished right out of the gate. Like I've done something today, like having that, even just that sense of accomplishment early on because success begets success, right? And so I think if you can start that day, you know, with that consistent habit that you're like, hey man, you know, I've already got a win under my belt for the day. Cause there's a lot of, I mean, days will throw a lot of crap at you, you know, yep. And it'll make you feel like, did I really get anything done today? Yeah. I at least hit my consistent, you know, at least the one consistent thing out of the gate early on. I think that's absolutely fantastic. Talk to us, you know, about the things that you focus on. So, you know, three things we talked about kind of off air was mindset. We've talked about that a little bit and the mindset it takes in running, the mindset it takes in, you know, in your business. What are some other things that you really focus on that are kind of drivers for why you invest the way you do?
You know, when you look at what you're trying to do in your business, you have to look at it from a sustainability factor, right? And so and that's not just on the business model, right? But it's also on you wanting to do it. These syndications, they're not meant to be, okay, we'll be in this for maybe, you know, a 3-week flip or a wholesale or like 3-4 months, right? You might be 3, 5, 7 years into an opportunity, even longer, right? And so it's putting yourself in the right mindset to understand that this is going to be a process that you will be involved in where you have the ability to help others, right? There's a lot of investors out there that were able to help, right? You know, my aunt comes to mind. She worked for a bank forever, had money in like her IRA and like literally probably made like 17 cents in the course of like with all the stocks and other points over the course of like 30 years at a bank, right? And one of the times I mentioned something to her and she used her self-directed IRA. I've made her more money in, you know, the course of the 4 years that she's been into our deals than she would have ever made in 3 lifetimes at the bank. Right? Just because it gave her that opportunity to understand that there's other arenas out there for her. Now, she's not going to go out there and do it. And if she wanted to, cool, I'd love her too, but just doesn't want to. Sure. Right? And there's a lot of people like that. Then you give them the opportunity here where they can change. Just like we can help set the narrative for our future, we can help others change the narrative of their future through opportunities like multifamily, right? Because multifamily gives you a lot of advantages besides, of course, the cash flow or the appreciation. You get depreciation, you get tax advantages, you get debt pay down, you get portfolio diversification, right? So there's a lot of ways that we can help others meet their goals where they don't directly have to be doing the do.
I love that. That's absolutely fantastic. Talk to us about community engagement. What does that mean to you inside of your properties? And what are you guys doing that's unique that you feel like sets you apart?
You know, you look at a story of just thinking about people, and sometimes if we get too just unidentifying with actually that there's actually people living here, you'll see the adverse effect, right? It's like you go to like open up like a Wendy's without having like the customer service aspect. But what we come into is like a lot of these properties, the customer service aspect has been long gone, right? We brought a property to Decatur, Georgia, closed on in December, and they were having trouble with collections, trouble with tenants. Well, they opened the leasing office for 2 hours a week, right? And so, of course, like where are people going to go pay rent? They're like, what if it's like a 2 hours on like a Thursday from like 12 to 2, like people are at work or they worked all night. Now they're sleeping or they're on their lunch break or they're watching their show. I don't know, but you're not making it easy for them, right? Or the other side, you know, they have maintenance calls and you're not responding. You're not showing up. You're not getting it done for them, right? So you come on here and you show people that you want to make this better. You want to make this a better place to live. It's twofold. One, they're going to take better care of the property because now they're treating it more like a place they live and not just somewhere they're passing through. But if I know and they're going to come tell us, hey, there's a leak here or a leak there, well, it's not going to be thousands of dollars that are running down the drain every month just because we're not aware of it, right? Because they know now we'll come fix it. So we'll see a lot of our expenses start to curb. On the other point here, it will start to bring the level up of the community so you can get back to bringing it up by doing good things where you will be able to increase the rents, because people will be happier to live there. So you can start meeting the market, start setting a destination. And if you get to that level, you start get to that next point where friends start to live by friends and be evolved. And you find that if someone lives with their friends, there's a less likelihood for them to move because they're not just living there in a place where it's like the unknown parameter of them by themselves.
Jason, I love that. I love the fact that you guys are focusing on community engagement first. I mean, because yeah, it goes back to the basic tenet of capitalism, which is that I provide something of value and then you in turn are willing to pay me for it. We're both made better by the transaction. It's just a beautiful thing. So I think really being active on the community engagement side and making it a place where people want to live is really cool. Are you guys buying things that are, you know, lower classes of properties and doing heavy lifts, or what does that look like?
So we typically are looking for in-place assets, B2C assets built 1975 to 2010 in our Southeast markets here. And where we're looking here is that we're looking to not find the heavy lifts. I've already done enough flood zone properties. I know the uncontrollables there. I don't want to do anything with environmental. I don't want to do anything with foundation. I don't want to be in war zones or very, very poor areas. I want to find places where it's workforce housing that's been underserved, whether it's on the property side or the management side, typically on both, right? And of course, it's a driving leader for a lot of people looking for these properties today. However, there are still opportunities there, right? And it's more in creating the relationship and carrying it through with your network, right? So say we have 10 opportunities, they're probably 70%, 80% still coming from brokers. And the other, you know, 20, 30% is coming from a mix of, you know, connections, you know, direct to seller and other. In the multifamily world, you know, there's everything doesn't have to be brought to market. So you have a lot of stuff where the broker will have this pocket and it won't see the light of day, right? And so it's going to go to that network. So it's just showing use case that you show up, you say you're going to, you know, offer this price, you're going to transact at this price, you're going to be an easy close, you're going to get the closing done, right? That carries weight with the broker.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Is there a certain size you guys are staying under or over that you find makes sense right now?
You know, ideally, if it was perfect world, it would be 75 to 150 units because that gives you the best economies of scale there and the ability to have on-site leasing and on-site maintenance that's paid by the property, right? Afford it in a good way because you could put a leasing person on 10 units if you want to, but it's not going to be paid by the property, right? So, however, we've been finding a couple opportunities. We just did a 36 unit, right? Where it was an opportunity that came in front of us and we capitalized on the time. Right. So driven by the part here is that like if we can find a 36 unit in a market that we're currently already in, we can leverage some of the economies of scale between the properties here where we're running multiple communities and basically sizing down on our ability to have where we can't afford it on the 36, but maybe on 93, we're a little underserved on how much our payroll is costing here. So now we can split it across properties here and have both properties win by the economies of scale being split.
We're seeing a lot of that. I think that's the frontier, I think, to the people starting out or people scaling up their business that's still a viable opportunity, you know, because there's lots of that stuff in the sub 70. I don't think any new product is coming online sub 75 units, but certainly some legacy stuff that's still out there.
Oh, yeah.
And that's opportunity for people entering the space, I think, to get in and buy some real valuable assets that your institutional players just, they're just not going to monkey with.
So. Yeah, they don't want it. It doesn't give them the yield that they're looking for. They don't want the coupons. And it's hard on the resale because you have to know who your end buyer is going to be. And so if you're buying a 50 units, that's not going to go out to an institutional player. That's going to sell to another group that's like myself, or it's going to sell to like a doctor or lawyer, someone in that context. So you know, those groups want to go in there and be able to get into a property and sell out to like a life insurance company or something, right? And a larger property where it is a community. And they also have a certain threshold of capital, right? So it's a $10 million deal. Our minimum's got to be 40, you know? And so they're at a certain point where it's got to be a certain amount of capital for them to put to get back the returns they need for it to make sense.
Right. Man, that makes a heck of a lot of sense. Jason, I've enjoyed our conversation. That has been tons of fun. You know, we've talked everything from mindset, family, focus, community engagement, how you guys are finding opportunity, what it takes to scale. You've given us lots of thoughts. And again, the one that I just go back to over and over is that you said discovery comes in the action. And I ask people that question all the time on this show. I said, like, what's a mistake you can help our listeners avoid? Which you'll get a chance for this. And more often, not more often, but a common answer is just take action. But I've never heard it quite put that way of discovery comes in the action, because there's always that step that then it's like a flashlight at your feet. You're like, oh, wait, I took a step forward. Now I can see where I'm going for the next step. And I think that's a beautiful way to put that. So I appreciate you coming on today. Here's the final four questions. What is a tool or resource? Think software, think something you use online, a program you use, a software or a digital resource that you find you can't live without.
Oh man, well, you know, everything can be taken away. So I say that's a hard narrative of not to live without, but let's say Asana. Asana is a very useful part of our business, tracking all the moving pieces we have between all the properties right now. So I think that's been really beneficial.
Asana. What does Asana do?
It's an action task platform. Okay. Similar to like you would set up like a Monday, right? Or like a Podio where it sets action tasks, assigns members, sets out narratives of things that need to be part of dictating the scope that needs to happen in accordingly time. So it's been useful in that light.
Love it. Okay, cool. Very cool. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Surround yourself with people doing it, right? Don't sit on the sideline trying to figure it all out, right? It's not a new industry. Right. We always want to be smarter than everybody else and have this magical thing we're going to do. And that's some fantastic thing that's going to be magical. Right. But go out there, find someone else who's doing it. Ask them a couple of questions. Go out there and try, and then go back to them and ask them more once you need to ask more questions. It's as simple as that. Just go out there, ask people that you want to try do something, because you may find like that just seeing them do it, you realize you don't want to do it. Right. And that's almost more powerful sometimes, is just to learn what you don't want to do instead of trying to figure out everything of what you might want to do.
Right. Absolutely love that. Question number three is this: when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
It gets back to community, right? We're constantly trying to serve that narrative where we get in there, and we do want this to be a better place to live, right? And because if you constantly look at a point where it's just money driven, it's going to be short-lived, right? Because there's going to be a certain point where that's not the right play for the time, even, and you're looking too much on the short term than the long term.
Right. I love that. Jason, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah, you can go over to Yerusi Holdings. You can find everything about our company, about us here. Talk to us about investments and some of the events we have coming up in the future.
Awesome. And we'll find all those links, of course, there in the show notes. And Jason, thank you for coming on today. I do appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.